No matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter where you are right now, you are welcome here. Welcome to Daily Audio Bible Chronological. I'm Jill, and today is the 27th day of October. Welcome, everyone. It is so good to be here with you, journeying through the Bible in chronological order. We do it every day here. We're celebrating 20 years over at Daily Audio Bible of the Bible reading being read fresh every single day, 24/7, 365, 20 years. I am so immensely proud of my husband for his faithfulness, his dedication, and his service to this community. And I am also so grateful and so proud of this community. This is a safe space, and we do not take that lightly. And so, if you're here, welcome. This is safe. Please know that wherever you've been, whatever you've been through, wherever you are now, whatever you are going through, you can come and be here. Please don't be ugly to one another. Besides that, you can pretty much be whoever you are. Today we are reading Luke chapters 14 and 15 as we continue in the Gospels. And this week we are reading the New Revised Standard Version, Updated Edition, Luke chapter 14. On the occasion when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. Just then, in front of him, there was a man who had edema. And Jesus asked the experts in the law and Pharisees, "Is it lawful to cure people on the Sabbath or not?" But they were silent. So Jesus took him and healed him and sent him away. Then he said to them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that has fallen into a well, will you not immediately pull it out on a Sabbath day?" And they could not reply to this. When he noticed how the guests chose the places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, "Give this person your place." And then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, "Friend, move up higher." Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers and sisters or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." One of the dinner guests, on hearing this, said to him, "Blessed is anyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God." Then Jesus said to him, "Someone gave a great dinner and invited many. At the time for the dinner, he sent his slave to say to those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is ready now.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, 'I have bought a piece of land and I must go out and see it. Please accept my regrets.' Another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I am going to try them out. Please accept my regrets.' Another said, 'I have just been married and therefore I cannot come.' So the slave returned and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and said to his slave, 'Go out at once into the streets and lanes of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame.' And the slave said, 'Sir, what you ordered has been done, and there is still room.' Then the master said to the slave, "Go out into the roads and lanes and compel people to come in, so that my house may be filled. For I tell you, none of those who were invited will taste my dinner." Now large crowds were traveling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is useful neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. They throw it away. If you have ears to hear, then hear." Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. "Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my lost sheep.' Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the wealth that will belong to me.' So he divided his assets between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant region, and there he squandered his wealth in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that region, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that region, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' and they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." And the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." Jesus, we thank you for your word. There is so much for us to consider today in your word. I pray that we would all pause. We would all consider the words, let them sink past the surface into the deep. May we be like you, God. May we see the people that are hurting and broken and lost around us and not scoff at them, not walk away, not walk past, but may we offer the hope, the love, the healing of the brokenhearted, the freer of the prisoners. Some of us are imprisoned to our own selves. God, would you set us free from ourselves? We cannot see others around us when we are in bondage to our own entitlement, our own victimization. And that is not to dismiss what has happened to so many, but God, you are the healer of our brokenness. And may we be courageous enough to invite you into the brokenness, where only you can heal us from the inside out. Have your way and heal us. This is my prayer today, and I pray it in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Welcome back, Mrs. Harden.
Welcome. Hello.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode, edition, installment of whatever this is with Brian and Jill. And we are, we have had a long day of travel.
9 hours plus, but who's counting?
To get somewhere where we are. And that is the island, the Isle of Patmos, which is a Greek island that is off the coast of Turkey, near Ephesus. And it is famous because some of the most impactful writing in all of the Bible happened here, the Book of Revelation. So, we've come. We will have a little bit of time in the morning to see the things that there are to see, and then we have a really, really long travel day tomorrow. Not looking forward to it. But we will end up in Crete.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah. It's going to be a long, long day. So we literally set up a little studio right here on our hotel bed. I'm like literally sitting here talking to you right now.
Oh, no, I'm fully in bed laying.
Yes.
Down.
So we want to just check in. We got some rest and had a day off, and we needed that. We had to get up really early, catch a flight to an island called Kos. And Kos is in the Bible. It is very briefly mentioned in Acts chapter 21. It is a place that, like, I'm starting to get it now. These islands are all over the place, and I see why they sailed the way that they did.
Mm-hmm.
To stay from the open sea and stay out of the storms.
Mm-hmm.
And stay close to, like, island places that they could try to get to if they got caught in a storm. Because there's islands all over the place.
They are so beautiful.
So beautiful.
If there are any that are unclaimed.
I think there were a couple. But they look like very small pieces of rock.
I would volunteer to build a little garden set up.
Mm-hmm.
On
my... mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Just even like a third of an acre. A quarter of an acre.
Mm-hmm. They are absolutely beautiful. Unique. Very unique. And so... But I get it. Like, that really clicked for me today. Spending the hours that we spent on a boat. Moving between these islands to get out here to Patmos. So, it made sense to me. Like, okay, I... First of all, this is kind of how they got around. They're very similar to the way we got around. Except for they had to use wind.
Mm-hmm.
And to navigate and all. And, you know, we, of course, were propelled by massive engines. But I was like, okay, this is actually how they got from place to place. And it all makes sense to me. And so Paul was traveling and actually had a stop in Coates briefly. And then on to Rhodes, which is a place that we have to go through tomorrow. And so these aren't places where he got off the boat and planted a church, but they are places that he stopped. And the harbor at Coates is the same harbor. So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to sit there on the dock with all of our stuff for hours waiting for the boats just so we wouldn't miss the boat. But there were worse places in the world to be trapped or like to be sitting for hours. It was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day.
And got to learn a little bit more about Kos.
This is the hospitality situation that we're in right now. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
After sitting for about 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I was like, it's so pretty. I'm going to go just lay out in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Because our suitcases and the benches where we could sit in were under a canopy.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I love the sun. I want to go sit in the sun. And I was just laying on the cement for about 4 minutes. And this precious lady came to me and said, excuse me, are you okay? Are you okay? Is there something wrong with you? And I said, oh, I am just enjoying the sunshine.
In fairness, you were enjoying the sunshine on this, like, massive parking lot, like cement.
Well, there was nowhere else to sit.
Literally, you were right. There was nowhere else to go. But you were kind of like laying in the middle of the road.
I just wanted some sunshine. It wasn't a beach. It was like...
It was the closest thing you could get.
A cement landing or jump in the water.
Yeah. Well...
And float.
Yeah. So, all of that. And interestingly enough, I learned Kos has ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
Like way more ancient than Paul, like 500 BC history, like Hippocrates was from there.
Yeah.
So like, and I learned like, okay, because we had learned about the god Asclepion, I think, was sort of where hospital and, you know, health came from. And Hippocrates is like one of the first people to start applying scientific ideas to health. And I mean, like, I learn in school, all of us probably learn in school that, you know, like doctors take the Hippocratic Oath, and that's from Hippocrates. And he was like, Kos was an island of healing way before Paul like docked there for a minute. So people would come from all over the place to find healing. And I was like, man, reading about that. And they had like this, we didn't get to see any of this stuff, but the hospital, like the place of healing still exists.
Yeah.
From Greek times, Hellenistic times, Roman times. And it was really interesting how places for like diet and beginning to understand what you put in your body is what kind of what can make you healthy. And they even had chambers for sleeping, for healing dreams,
mm-mm,
like mental health and all kinds of stuff. On this island of Kos, this ancient island out in the middle of the ocean.
Fun fact about my husband. If there is a piece of history to be found in any place that he goes while getting lunch for his family, a lovely pizza and Greek salad, he will find the ancient ruins and give you a entire history lesson.
Yeah.
I love that about you.
Thank you.
History over Greek salad and pizza. Very good salad and pizza, by the way.
It was good. I love learning. And I wasn't expecting to learn that. And that was cool way to kind of spend some of that time that we had to sit there and wait for the boat. So,
yes.
So that's cool. A place called Kos, very briefly named in Acts chapter 21. Paul stopped in that harbor where we were sitting. Maybe he needed some sun. Maybe he laid down.
Maybe he had him a Greek salad.
And maybe he had a Greek salad. And then moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did, eventually. And got on a boat heading toward Patmos and moved among those islands. I can't remember the grouping of islands. It starts with a D. And we made a lot of stops along the way to get here to Patmos, where tomorrow morning we will, you know, see the connection points to the Apostle John the theologian, as he is known here, and the Apocalypse of John, the book of Revelation that was written here, that has captured the intense imagination of everyone who has read it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to process that, like, that we're here and that work was inspired here.
Yeah.
We visited all of those seven churches that appear in the book of Revelation. And now we're here where that originated. And we'll get to see that before we leave here. But we did get some time, and it is a beautiful, like, it is beautiful. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's 7 miles long and 3 miles wide. It's small.
Roughly 3,800 people live here.
Yeah.
And there are several celebrities that own homes here.
Ah, now that was a piece that you discovered.
Yes.
Fun fact about my wife. If there's a famous person who owns a house somewhere.
Really?
I'm just playing with you.
And I love architecture. I love houses. I love different houses. And I mean, the starkness of these islands, and you can see 3 or 4 islands with nothing, and then all of a sudden there's just this gorgeous home.
Mm-hmm.
That stands alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't want to go see inside that house.
Yeah.
And how do these people go to the grocery store?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Life like this must be very different, but it sure is appealing.
It is, just because it's so quiet and quaint. Like, leaving Athens last night, you and I got to explore a little bit. We just found our favorite little place there.
Mm-hmm.
And went back a second time to have this dessert that mm-hmm. a friend made me several years ago that I had never had before in my life until she made it. And then I saw it on the menu at this restaurant that we were at, and I've never seen it on a menu. So the first night we were there, I ordered it, and they were completely out.
Right.
So we had dinner, and I said, oh, let's go back to that place and have banoffee.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. So we it was very yummy. We had our favorite little place to have a little date before we left the island, or mm-hmm. Athens.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a Saturday night, and it was so people-y.
Oh man, it was hopping.
It was even more busy than the other days and nights that we were there, and it's already just a really happening part of town. So leaving that and going to quaint and quiet just felt like a reprieve
mm-hmm.
for my soul.
Same. And it was so, like I said, like, we're here and we're just describing our day and wanted to check in, because tomorrow we got a real, like, there's literally nowhere way we're going to be able to do this until day after tomorrow. And so we just wanted to pop in, even though there's not like a ton of biblical things to say. We're here on Patmos, and it's so quaint, and it was so sweet to just walk hand in hand with you.
Same.
Down these little alleys and streets, and
yeah.
I love that so much, and it is quiet, and like I said, I am still truly, like, revelation. I have a strange relationship with that book.
Same.
Because my early life, that was like a book that literally scared the living crap out of me.
It scared the hell out of me.
And I just, as a kid, you know, so many people would be saying so many different things that were like predictive, and I would be scared as a kid of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that was the intention too. I mean, that's why I said what I said. Is that there was kind of this fear of hell.
Yeah. But it wasn't just like a fear of hell for me. It was like a fear of all the things that were, you know, going to happen that I just couldn't understand. And there's so many different explanations. And
yeah.
And then, you know, just kind of growing up, just with that in the back of your mind, it's just kind of always there. And then I, you know, I've read it 20 times now. And there was one year that I just did a deep dive, like literally did a, like, as scholarly of a dive as I possibly could, to go like, all right, this is apocalyptic literature. What is the symbolism here? Because you can make this mean so many things.
Right. Right.
And it has been used in so many ways, for so many reasons. And that is not just in our lifetime. That is been since the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so over thousands of years, so many people have thought so many things about so many different circumstances in the world, and so many different leaders, and you know, numerology, and just everything about it. And yeah, and so just coming here and going like, man, if there is a single book in the Bible that has generated so much curiosity, so much fear, but also so much hope, and so much faith.
So many absolutes from something so abstract. Is that safe to say?
I think that's totally fair to say. It's like, wow, that is on this very, that like happened on this little tiny, like we're here. Like right now, you and I are talking from the place where this happened. And it's a little island. I was always taught this is like a prison island. Come to find out, that's not, it was an island of exile. The Roman Empire like had a couple of islands, and this is one of them, where, you know, like to silence maybe a political person or a religion, so, to silence somebody without making them a martyr.
Oh, wow.
Was to exile them and just kind of take them out of commission. Because to kill them would make them a martyr, which would actually make, you know, make it worse. Like if you're trying to like just silence a certain kind of movement or a certain kind of political message or something, to kill a person is to only make that stronger. So the empire had learned like exile, just like take them, like they don't have to be punished per se. They don't have to be killed. They don't have to be beaten down or anything that can make them a victim. Just pull them out of society, put them on an island. They can't escape. They cannot be heard. They are out of commission.
Wow.
And that's what Patmos was used for. And so John was obviously preaching.
Wow, that is so fast. Okay, hold on just a second. I'm just kind of sitting with that because I'm like, what a great rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. You kind of think you're sending them to punishment, but what if they just have all of this revelation? Like we learned at the monasteries, the monks who just remove themselves away from society to focus on God. I mean, I guess you can focus on whatever you want to focus on if you're all alone and don't know anybody.
Yeah.
But man, what a great way to, hopefully, it's a great way for someone to come to the end of themselves.
Sure. Sure. So John's here, having been sent from Ephesus here for preaching. I believe it was the Emperor Dalmatian. I don't remember. Man, there are so many facts and like there's piles of information to be processed.
And you're probably right.
In our New Testament knowledge. But he was pulled out of commission for teaching basically a foreign religion. Not like he hadn't been doing that all along, but there was like some selective persecution going on, and it affected John. And so he's out here on Patmos, and on the Lord's Day, this all come, you know, like Jesus speaks to these churches. And I mean, so like I said, I have this strange relationship with Revelation, but I've read it enough times to know, like, ultimately, underneath all the symbolism, ultimately, it is a message of endurance. Mm-hmm. And that happens in the New Testament. Like, as these letters progress, and in our year, as we read through them, but as the letters progress, the early church is getting impatient because, and they are starting to face hardship. And they're trying to figure out what's going on because they thought Jesus was coming back. Like, they thought that it was imminent, like that he was going to establish his kingdom and they were going to live it and see it. And then it wasn't happening and people were dying and people were suffering and being marginalized and their hope was being dashed. And so this message of endurance begins to appear really clearly in all these letters, but not any more clearly in the book of Revelation. Like, endure until the end is core to that work. And so it doesn't scare me. Like, it did in childhood, but it also like is fascinating to see just how much people are still trying to like sort out.
Yeah.
Like the calendar of it. And how to back read whatever is happening in the world in their lifetime to make it fit the book.
And it's like, did we miss that no man knows the day or the hour, like not even Jesus?
I mean, that was Jesus' eschatological view was basically be ready.
Right.
Pretend like it's now, like live like it's now, like. But nobody actually knows, except for the Father. So, I don't want to get into all that. Truly, I don't. I mean, I don't. I'm just, it's being here on Patmos. It's like touching something so young and so, you know, just so deep, I guess, that I don't know exactly kind of really what to do with it just yet. It's
That's
very
really
cool to go like, okay, you know, another place that is pivotal. Like we have so deeply chased the Book of Acts, so deeply truly followed the New Testament after the Gospels, because we've been all over the places that Jesus was.
Mm-hmm.
And so to really, really see how this played out, at least for me, and I think this is true for you, everything has changed as far as my view and understanding of why these letters and where these letters happened.
Oh, absolutely. Context matters.
Hugely, hugely. And just to kind of follow the steps and see the geography and understand the distances and... Man, it just...
And I think it's so comforting, really, to just hear you say that you have a difficult relationship with the Book of Revelations. Revelation. It's not Revelations, is it?
Mm-mm.
It's people from Michigan that put S on the end of everything. Like Walmarts, Kmarts, mm-hmm. and Revelations. Because I feel the same way. I remember reading it for myself the first time and going, wait a minute. I got these messages taught to me and believed them as a young child from this writing, from this interpretation, and repeated what I was taught so matter-of-factly, so certainly, so sort of self-righteously. And I'm where you're at. Like, I'm hoping to get even just an nth. Is that a word?
It works. I like it. I think you should keep it.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. A smidgen of some sort of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And usually learning the history and the context, it often does that in these places.
It's grounding is what it is. Like, it's a grounding thing to get rooted in the actual context so that you can apply it to your faith instead of just letting anything mean anything.
Yeah.
And we have this really, really bad habit of reading our culture back, like back reading it as if, you know, the Bible was written in the culture we understand. It's a totally different thing.
Right.
And so with thousands of years ago, with totally like a totally different part of the world. So it's not like human beings in the heart of a human being has changed, but the context in which things happen matter.
Mm-hmm.
To like actually doing the work of interpreting correctly and applying correctly what the Bible teaches us. So.
Yeah. And this also does not mean that we're going to visit this site and come away in 2 days and go, we now understand completely and can translate and articulate and explain the book of Revelations. But I do think, I don't know, I just think the cave in which John wrote this book, because apparently this is the place, the cave that he was in when he wrote it. I'm just intrigued to learn it all.
I am too.
I'm going to read the entire book tonight for reference before we go to bed.
Praise the Lord, sister. Sweet dreams.
I'm going to attempt to. I don't know how much we're going to actually make it through. Does that mean you're not going to stay up and read it with me?
No, I will.
Oh. All right.
I actually love the first part of Revelation.
You're actually going to read it to me aloud.
Okay. I love the first part of Revelation. The letters from Jesus. I actually love that.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say I don't love all of it, but those letters, they speak to me. They should speak to everybody. And reading them now, knowing that we know what those, you know, where those churches were.
Yeah.
It's really helpful. Anyway, we are on the island of Patmos briefly, and we have gotten to drink in the atmosphere of it and understand a little bit of the history of it and even look way up on the hill at a monastery from, I think, the 900s, because this island was bequeathed to a soldier, I believe.
Bequeathed?
Yeah.
It's a great word.
Like there were pirates here, like all kinds of stuff, but then this was kind of restored and a monastery was built and it became a place of pilgrimage. And I'm sure we will be able to share all of that as we learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here. And as we're here, having done none of those things yet, I'm just, at least personally, just sharing like how I'm feeling about being here.
Yeah, it's really sweet to see it affect you so profoundly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a deep connection to a lot of young fear and a lot of adult endurance. And so, and I think of John. Mm. I mean, it's like so weird. We were at his actual grave site.
Right.
And that is like probably not traditional. That is probably the real deal.
Yeah.
And in Ephesus, so where he was, and where, believe it or not, it seems like forever ago that we were in Ephesus, but we're less than 100 miles away from there.
Mm-hmm.
So, even though we've traveled like 2,000 miles since then, we're like back close again. So, I don't know. I don't really know what else to share. I think that's maybe where we're at right now.
I think one thing that I might add that you and I were discussing last night on our little date walk through Athens was, you know, belief is so imperative to how we live our life. And we can believe whatever we choose to believe, however we get those beliefs. A lot of times, even when it comes to religion, denomination, our beliefs are handed down. They're passed down from generation to generation. Because if you don't believe a certain way, you can be exiled in your own people group, your own family, your own community.
Absolutely.
And I mean, we actually seen that happen many times. We can hold on to those beliefs so tightly and have no idea where they've originated from, the origin of them, just because they've been passed down. It's like hearsay, right?
Yeah.
And think that we absolutely have it. We have the truth.
Right.
And we can believe things and miss reality.
Yeah.
But you said such a profound thing to add to that. Those beliefs become our reality.
Yeah, that's our faith.
That's our faith. But that's not necessarily truth.
Right.
It's just a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can't even be our truth because it's not, it may not be truth. We can believe in something so false. Sorry, I don't want to get weed deep here, but I think the thing when I think about where we're at right now is it's so freeing to be able to let go of the fear of the belief for me. I don't know what I believe about a lot of this right now.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's okay to say.
Mm.
Like, we want our leaders, we want to know what they believe and what they think about things so that we can know that we're right or that we're onto the right thing. I don't know where I'm at with this idea of revelation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know, I think this is where we ended up last night. It is so freeing to not have to believe in something because of fear.
Yeah.
If perfect love casts out fear,
mm-hmm.
then I think we're fearing a lot of the wrong things.
Right.
At least my own personal story, personal belief system.
Yeah.
So I'm here. I mean, you've kind of been joking about it, but it's kind of true. I'm here for any revelation I can get.
Me too.
On revelation.
I'm here for any revelations.
And I'm just excited.
There are possible.
I'm excited. I think I'm going to go into this tomorrow completely fear-free. That's my goal.
Yeah.
What's your goal?
To be open.
Yeah.
I think I give up the fear, at least the childhood fear, a long time ago.
Mm.
So I didn't come here afraid. It's just being here actually just kind of evokes, like, holy cow, that was this, like, of any book in the Bible, it's the one that confused me the most.
Sure. It's confusing.
And so, and the imagery and everything is so, like, vivid and, but also not, it's literature, it's poetic, it's apocalyptic, it's symbolic. And it's full of allegory and, you know, I think I gave up the fear when I did the deep dive, just going, okay, wait a minute. Why do we choose to read certain things literally and certain things figuratively? Why do we make, like, how do we make those determinations?
Right.
That this particular verse is literal and the next one is figurative and symbolic.
Right.
And, so kind of being able to get to the end of that and go, like, okay, here's a scholar, like, here truly is a scholarly view. Non-theological, like, not actually trying to make predictions or connect dots, but just what is really here in the text and why are we making these determinations? Because that's really what it comes down to for me in Revelation is, why do we just choose to take certain things literally and certain things symbolically?
Right.
And how do we make that determination? So I don't know that I came out here with any fear. It's just I'm here. Like, it's like, wow, the island of Patmos. Man, like, the whole book of Revelation comes from here. This is nuts. This is crazy to be out here on this little island in the middle of the ocean and be sitting here talking about it. It's nuts.
It is nuts. And I think, you know, a lot of what you just said, we've had to unravel in therapy, just individually and collectively, of, you know, how right do you have to get it? How perfect? How well do you have to perform perfectly to get it right? So that you don't miss what's coming, so that you can have, I don't know, so that you can say that you're right, so that you can believe that you're right. But it is a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
It's just very freeing to get off the hamster wheel.
Yeah. I agree. So.
So we're going fear-free.
Off the hamster wheel.
Off the hamster wheel. And I love that you've just found that little young place inside your heart. That you're going to honor and take with you and I don't know. I just think that's precious.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you.
Same.
And I'm glad we can take everybody along with us.
Same.
Into this. And I guess we'll sign off for now.
And we are going to take tomorrow off.
We have to. Like, we don't have a choice. By the time we, like, we will leave here and end up in Crete. And so kind of put ourselves in the book of Titus, the letter to Titus. But it's going to take, like, it'll be after, well after midnight before we get there. So, and then we have to be up really early for a long 10-hour day.
It's so, our most strenuous day of travel.
The most strenuous day of the whole thing. And that's just because of how, you know, it's not like, it's just not easy to get around these islands and get.
Yeah.
Like, there's, it's not like there's a flight on the hour, every hour, to every place you want to go. So you just kind of got to roll with what you can get. So we got a really long day. So thank you for praying for us, actually, on that, because it's going to be a very long day. But then we'll be back. We'll be back. And we'll be able to kind of share where we are and where we're going next and what we've seen and done. And we'll continue to have a video every day. We've been able to successfully do that. So, like, I, you know, right now I can't show you, we can't show you all these, you know, remarkable sights about John, but we can show you Patmos and how we got here. And so check that out. And in the meantime, thank you for your prayers. And that is all for today. I'm Brian.
I'm Jill.
We love you, and we will be not here tomorrow, but we'll be here in spirit. And we'll talk to you soon.